Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Gallen, and joining me in studio right now is a local author, Clifton Brusso. Clifton, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Rick, for inviting me.
Excited to talk to you about your latest book called A Few Fruits and an Onion. Before we get to that particular title, tell me a little bit about how you got into writing.
Well, when I was about 10 years old, my mother handed me a book. I think it was either The Count of Monte Cristo or Three Musketeers, and she said, "Your great-great-great-grandfather wrote this." And I said, who's that? And, Alexandre Dumas. And he's wrote classics and about 400 or 500 plays. And so I thought someday, in my back of my mind, every once in a while, I think, well, I'll be writing something, And it kind of stuck with me and never thought much about it until I was getting close to retirement. Back in about 91, 92, I put together a whole lot of short stories that I had written. It's called the Copper Country novels. And
written over the years?
Written over about 120 poems and short stories. And one of them is actually a full story on one page. And to put a kind of a catch to get a person reading it and a story and a surprise ending on one page. but anyway, and I wrote that. Then I had that put together, and I've been distributing that locally here. A lot of people have picked it up. And then I wrote Breakthrough, and that was a novel about a young boy who kind of got in trouble in school. He got blamed for the school being burned down. He took off, and a lot of strange things happened to him. And it became a bestseller in the UP. And I autographed it across the Midwest. I spent about 2 weeks in the Mall of America. And I spent another week, maybe a week and a half, in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I'd autograph for Walden Books in the morning and B. Dalton in the afternoon. But finding these bookstores, kind of rushing from one to the other was kind of a challenge. That was a lot of fun. And then I wrote another one called Frozen Solid. That I wrote, maybe about 3-4 years ago. And that's about a woman who becomes an astrophysicist, and she discovers an anomaly out in the outer space. And this anomaly then looks like it's going to destroy the Earth. And so a lot of things happen. There's Indian wars, and there's fighting. A lot of property is damaged by this thing that comes from outer space. And so I wrote a sequel to Breakthrough and a sequel to Frozen Solid. And then about 2 years ago, my wife broke her ankle around the 4th of July. So we couldn't do the stairs at home. We spent the whole summer at the cottage. And that's when I wrote Few Fruits and an Onion.
All right. I'm going to ask you to give us a kind of a synopsis of that book, but I want to kind of ask you a little bit, because you said that you didn't get into writing kind of full time here until after you retired, and which is
around the time I wrote Breakthrough while I was still working. Okay. And then I started writing after I retired.
All right. Yeah. Not entirely unheard of, too. I know that even some of our, some of our famous people in art, like Grandma Moses, was, she never painted until she was 70.
Right.
Now she's famous in folk history.
When you're retired, you have more time. Yeah,
more time. I know.
Although sometimes you wonder where the time goes.
Right. What was your career before you retired?
I was administrator of the Houghton County Medical Care Facility. About 35 years, and then I was also with the combat Army's Combat Corps of Engineers, and I ended up as a major with them.
A lot of life experience to draw from for your books.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, it's kind of interesting when I write. It's almost like I'm a recorder rather than actually the person writing. I see it in my mind like if you're watching television and I'm trying to two-finger tap out what they're doing, where they what they're saying and whatever. And so it's really a fast... I leave out a lot of common words and things to fill them in later so that I can keep up with it. Sometimes I go, wow, I didn't expect that to happen.
Anybody who does any writing, and especially writing long form, they understand exactly what you're talking about. That are the creator, but in a sense, you're more of just the vessel. Your characters that come alive, they have to behave in a certain way because that's who they are. And if you try to write them to behave in a way that's against their nature, it doesn't feel right. You know, so stories exactly. unfold. And as you're putting them on paper or on your word processor or computer, but as much as it is, it's born of you, there also seems to be a little bit of you're just discovering what's going to happen on the next page. And you go back and then read some of the things that you've written, and you can't believe that that came out of your head because you're like, wow,
Exactly.
And you can't duplicate it either. Anybody knows if you ever lost a manuscript and you sit down and try to rewrite it, you can't rewrite it the same way. It's gone. And
so I don't really have to do any revisions on it. And I don't write like a lot of people will make a outline and try to stay with that outline. And that would be kind of boring to me. But anyway, the characters are real in my mind. It's a fast-moving novel. It's a mystery, comedy, thriller. There's no fill in it, like Roses by the Trellis. Some of them will put a lot of, he went to the refrigerator and made a ham sandwich. It has nothing really to do with the story. So this keeps it fast moving. And there's no flashbacks, like Stephen King has lots of flashbacks. You're reading and all of a sudden he's 5 years back or 10 years back and brings you up to the date and then he's back again. There's none of that, so it keeps it moving. The novel actually, the characters are a couple of call girls out of Chicago who get in some dangerous circumstances and they take off and head into Wisconsin. And the Onion is a bad boy out of Calumet, and there's quite a bit about his life in Calumet before he ends up in Wisconsin with these girls. And there's actually a whole lot of the girls out there, so it's more than just two. But as the story develops, more of them enter into it. And there's a storm in Wisconsin. Somebody ends up in a tornado. There's bodies discovered, and it's like, whose bodies are they? And, there's a group of ex-detectives whose motto is, you hide the body and we'll find it, and you. And these people are like famous cartoon characters or novel characters, Dick Tracy, Charlie Chan. There's about seven or eight of them form this ex-detective agency in Wisconsin because they're up in their 80s, by now. So they get involved with finding missing people and help the discoveries. So.
Okay. So the two women involved in this, are they the heroines of it, and then you're the antagonist is the Calumet guy?
No. They're just scared women running for their lives.
All right.
Yeah.
Is it?
And they get involved in this big storm, and there's a bounty hunter, Stephanie Plummer, who gets involved in it. It's a comedy, and it keeps you pages turning.
And a mystery.
They're very definitely a mystery. Yeah.
All right. So definitely sounds like an interesting premise. And this is not related to any of the other books that you read. This is a completely new story.
No, none of the books are related to me or the area other than this bad boy anything that any part of my life or each other. No, they're not related. They're all
I know a lot of people who develop stories and are from this area or use this area. I mean, they really use the area to almost to the point where it's difficult if you're not from this area to understand, you know, what we're talking about. And I guess that's why a lot of people use famous places like Chicago or New York, because they're more relatable to a general public. Mm-hmm. When we start talking about Upers and Pasties and Sisu, and you know, for us, we know what those those things are, but that, you know, that's a little bit lost in translation when it comes to other audiences reading it. So other than the fellow being from Calumet, how much of the local area lore do you rely on in your stories?
Not really a whole lot. Like even my first novel, Breakthrough, that centered around Boston, Massachusetts. And then the Frozen Solid kind of centered around an area down in Texas.
Oh, so, okay, yeah, you would think of Texas, you think of Frozen Solid would have been from here, you know. Yeah, it was based on a story in April here in the Copper Country, Frozen Solid. All right, well, that's interesting. Now, a few fruits and an onion, have you gotten any feedback or reviews on that story yet?
Oh, yes. Well, actually, it won the 30th Annual National Pinnacle Book Achievement Award competition that was held. I think it started in May and it ended in August. And the competition covered all kinds of books. I mean, religion, novels about fact, fiction, just you name it. There were books in the competition.
Oh, congratulations. But mine
was in the mystery comedy section of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And besides, you know, that award, I mean, that's awesome. If you heard it, what's the feedback? What are people telling you about the story?
Oh, wow. They're loving it. It's a page turner, yeah. And it was advertised out in New York and did real well. And there was a... I forget the name of the radio station. They had it in their newspaper, their online, and a couple of interviews there. Mm. So it's doing very well.
Mm-hmm. So this is something that's available nationally.
Yes, it is. Any bookstore in the world can order it if they don't have it in stock. It can be bought online through Amazon or Alibris or, you know, ABE Books. And, of course, locally, all the bookstores locally would have it. You know, your store, Book World,
which is closed.
Michigan Tech, yeah. Finlandia, the one in Houghton here.
The Bookworm?
Bookworm.
Okay.
Down at Grandpa's Barn in Copper Harbor. Maybe that Lighthouse bookstore in Eagle River would have it. I forget the other bookstore down. They sell antiques and things down in Copper Harbor. I'm sure they would have it. Northwind Books, I think, up in North 5th Street in Calumet would have it.
Yeah.
So if they don't have it, they certainly can order it for you. And it started off at $15.95, and the publisher priced it that high. And I asked them to drop the price on it to make it more available to people so they can, you know, have it. And so now they've dropped the price and it's only $11.95. So they came down $4 on the cover price of it.
Paperback, hardcover, or both?
It's paperback.
Paperback, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. The novel is called A Few Fruits and an Onion, and you mentioned that how some of it takes place in Chicago, or at least these women that are involved in the story come from Chicago. And you also mentioned that you had, you know, your first novel was based in Boston. What's your experience as traveling to some of these places that you were able to draw upon?
Well, I've traveled a lot. I've been all over the U.S. pretty much, Europe, and the Texas area, down in the Padre Island area, and out to California. Yeah, I do. But I do a lot of research on the area like, you know, street names and that kind of thing. Yeah. So that it's pretty authentic.
Probably got the eye open whenever you're traveling, and inspiration from some of the most unlikely sources of, you know, even, you know, a subway station or something.
I'm sure a lot of that in the back of my mind comes out in the when I'm writing about it. Sure.
All right. Do you have an excerpt available that you could read?
Oh, sure. I brought one along with me. I don't know how much time we have left, but I'll start off here, and you just stop me if I'm going.
Sure, go ahead. Take a couple of minutes. Yeah, no problem.
Okay. Well, this says, what do you mean you don't know what you're doing and hiding from? Then Jasmine gets her guts in a knot and yells, tell me, girl, what is going on here? Don't just give me all this BS. You've got to tell me what's going on before I let you stay with me. I think I killed someone. Oh, my God. You didn't kill your boyfriend, Bugaboo, did you? Of course not. All I know is that I was with this dude, and he started swatting me in the head. And, you know, I don't stand for none of that stuff. So I grabbed the lamp and smacked him in the head. Blood shot out all over me. I pushed him off me and jumped up, got out of there on the run. I rushed out and come over here, hoping that no one saw me. Is he dead? I don't know. He fell on me, and I saw his eyes go blank. Whatever it is, they're going to be looking for me fast. Where were you when this happened? In this building across the hall from you, number 28. Did anyone see you come here? I could be accused of hiding, a fugitive, you know. I don't like that idea, not at all. I don't think so. I was so afraid. I just rushed over here. I didn't really see anyone, but I was in too much of a hurry to look. Did you leave anything in the apartment or touch anything and leave fingerprints? I guess they were on the lamp, but nowhere else. What about the door handle? I will bet you left some bloody ones there, too. I suppose I did, Tamil responds. We should go back in there and wipe them clean. You can't go. Not like that, Jasmine says. Then she runs for the door, crosses the hall to number 28 and tries the doorknob. It's locked. Quickly she turns and heads back to her apartment and finds in her haste she has locked herself out. She raises her hand to knock on the door, then rethinks, not wanting to know and let anyone know that she's there. She says, damn. Thinks, now what do I do? Tamla is probably in the shower and won't hear me if I call her. Her hand feels sticky, and she looks at it, blood. Her palm is covered in blood. Damn, 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 she says. Then she realizes it has come from the doorknob. Quickly, she retrieves the tissue from her pocket and wipes her hand, then her doorknob. Tamla, who has been standing near the back of Jasmine's cougar, is narrowly missed by the airborne metal. This is a different section of the...
Okay.
She jumps backward and yells at Stephanie, are you trying to kill me or what? Jasmine jumps out of her vehicle and runs back to survey the damage. Stephanie looks in the rearview mirror, hits the brakes, and brings the car to a stop. She jumps out, leaving the car on a level parking area, and in her haste, the car is still in drive. Seeing her bumper lying on the pavement, she becomes frustrated and yells, damn it, now look what you've done, pulled my bumper off. Stephanie has her hand on the rear quarter panel when the car starts to move forward, slowly at first, then picking up speed. Bumper is partially attached, so as it rolls past Stephanie, the edge of it catches her pant leg. Suddenly, she is pulled off balance and falls to the ground. The car drags her across the small parking lot and into the ditch where it finally stops. She yells, help me up. I'm caught on this damn thing. Help yourself up, you no good. Look what you've done to my car. Lying on her side, clothes torn and full of gravel scratches, she yells, I tried to do you a favor and look what it's got me. Tamla ignores what Jasmine has said and hurries over and helps Stephanie untangle herself. Then she helps her to her feet. Brushing the sand and fine rocks from her torn and bleeding arm, she looks down at her jeans. They are torn to shreds on one side. The blood is oozing from the shreds near her knee. "How the heck did you hook up with that strap?" Jasmine yells. "I thought you knew what you were doing." She's talking about the strap that they hooked the cars together with there.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Ignoring Jasmine's comment, Tamla suggests, "You had better have a look at your leg." "What are you yelling about? What about me? Trying to help you put me in the ditch. You dumb blonde, you shouldn't have floored the gas and jerked the strap, pulling my bumper off." And she ends with jerk. Stephanie goes into the trunk of her car and comes up with her handbag. She rifles through it, pulling out a pepper spray, a handgun, and finally a box of large Band-Aids. Now, Stephanie is the bounty hunter.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. You have an excerpt there from A Few Fruits and an Onion. You took a couple of different spots. Were those all like towards the beginning of the novel, or did you pick from different spots?
Well, there's one of them right at the beginning.
Yeah.
The first one starts at the beginning. And the other one is just a little bit before the storm starts, and they all head into a Wisconsin area. And there's a ex-detective, a pig farmer now, and he's coming back from hauling pigs to Milwaukee, and he ends up helping these people out of the situation there, out of the ditch. And out. The first one, I guess I didn't start where she's in the water. This dumb gal has a radiator that's leaking, and it's steaming out. So she drives into the stream to fish the water out with her hands and throw it into, well, she gets the radiator full, but then she finds she's stuck in the water. So that's where the second part starts.
Okay. All right. Well, the character of the guy from Calumet, what can you tell me about him, since we didn't hear about him in your excerpts?
Well, he's a guy that's he's in with a gang that's looting and robbing and causing a lot of problems for people in the area. And he gets to the point where the cops are looking for him, so he takes off on his motorcycle to get out of there, and he heads into Wisconsin, where he's got some friends, and he thinks he's going to be able to get away from the trouble.
How long did it take you to write this particular one?
Amazingly, I think I probably pecked at it with two fingers until 2 or 3 in the morning while we were at the cottage, and I'd say about a month and a half.
Really?
Start to finish, yeah. And then, of course, probably another couple of weeks of editing it to not to change it or revise it, but to add the words that I misspelled and left out as I'm, going along so fast to keep up with the story.
Mm-hmm. And were you able to get a publisher and a distributor for it?
Well, it took me, about a year and a half to, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We all know that story.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, people, especially like local talent,
If you're not known, it's pretty hard to get into the industry.
Yeah. Well, quite amazingly that this is your fifth book that you've now completed. Do you have plans to write another one? What triggers that desire to start a new one?
Well, I don't know. It's just like it starts nagging you a little bit. You have ideas that maybe could be incorporated into a book, and so you think, well, geez, maybe, and then all of a sudden something happens, and somebody's you're talking to somebody, and something kind of gets together, gels, and you say, well, geez, I'll sit down and see what happens. And you start start at the word processor, and away you go.
Away you go. All right. A few fruits and an onion. That's available right now. Can you give us again where the people can get it?
Okay, it's available worldwide, any bookstore, online. I think if you get the online copy for the Nook and some of these others, it's a little cheaper. And if you want to download it that way, from Amazon or any of the other places that have it. It's also available locally in all your, any bookstore like Michigan Tech, Finlandia, Bookworm, Copper World, Northwind Books on the end of 5th Street, down at Copper Harbor.
So pretty much anywhere you look, you're going to find it.
Swedes, right? or Grandpa's Barn.
Right. All right. My guest has been Clifton Brusso. He's the author of A Few Fruits and an Onion. Clifton, it was great talking to you.
Yes. Thank you, Rick, for having me. It's been enjoyable. Okay. Yes, thank you.
Copper Country Today. We'll be right back.